From the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX, this is Reveal. I'm Al Edson. This week, we're looking at money in American politics. How much is given, who gives it, and why? Does it really make a difference? To help us out this week, we're joined by the Center for Public Integrity's John Dunbar. John is an executive editor who runs the Center's Buying of the President Project. His reporting team meticulously tracks every single dollar spent in the race to the White House. Welcome, John.
Good to be here, Al.
So we're going to get into a lot this hour. But first, John, what's the biggest change money-wise since the last presidential election?
Well, the biggest change is that there's just a lot more of it. This is on track to be the most expensive election in American history. Almost $1 billion, that's billion with a B, has been raised for the race to the White House already. Some estimates place the final total cost at more than $5 billion. That's about double of what was spent in 2012.
And all of this because in 2010, Citizens United came out. Now, that was the Supreme Court decision that changed the entire landscape of political fundraising. How has that specifically changed it? I mean, like, what did that ruling do?
Well, it's interesting because at the time, I don't think anybody really was paying a whole lot of attention to it. But it was a sea change. It's changed how elections are funded in a very profound way. One of the main things that decision did was open the floodgates for these things that we call super PACs.
Okay, so let's say that I decided to run for office and you wanted to create a super PAC just for me because you love my values and my great ideas. I'd be a great president because I would, and I look good in a suit. So let's say that you were running my super PAC. What limits would there be on you going out and getting money from me?
Well, for one thing, I'm not supposed to coordinate with you. But for another thing, I can go out and collect unlimited amounts of money from practically any source. I can collect money from a corporation. I can collect money from a labor union. I can take money like we see so much right now from a billionaire. I can collect $10 million and I can go out and I can run an ad saying that Al's just the greatest thing since sliced cheese and it's all perfectly legal.
I'm lactose intolerant, so I won't eat the cheese, but I appreciate the love. So there's no limits at all. You could basically bankroll my entire run.
Absolutely. I could pay for your ground, what they call the ground game, knocking on doors, handing out flyers.
And paying for ads, right?
Right. Ads are by far the biggest expense, and the vast majority of those ads are attack ads, especially now.
And this is mostly on the Republican side, right? I mean, you guys have found that on the Democratic side, outside groups like super PACs are paying for just 1% of TV ads. On the Republican side, it's over half. How's that playing out?
Right now, we're seeing a really interesting phenomenon, actually. You got Trump, who's a billionaire himself, the Republican frontrunner, and he doesn't rely on super PACs at all. Meanwhile, just this week, a group of Republican super PACs have gotten together, and they're going to spend anywhere between $10 and $25 million, we've read, to join forces and try to shoot them down in the key primaries in Ohio and Florida. Now, for some people who don't like Donald Trump, well, maybe they think super PACs aren't such a bad thing.
Yeah, it just seems to me if you're not Donald Trump and you don't have access to all of this money, when these super PACs come after you, like, you're kind of stuck.
Yeah, unless you're a billionaire or unless you have really an impressive grassroots support like Bernie Sanders has, to be competitive in this race, you better have a super PAC.
That is John Dunbar of the Center for Public Integrity. He's going to be joining us throughout the show. John, talk to you in a bit and keep thinking about being my campaign manager. That'd be great.
Okay, thanks, Al.
John's team of reporters at the Center has been tracking money behind political ads throughout this election season. We're going to take a closer look at how it's done with Reveal's Laura Starcheski.
In an office building in Washington, D.C., one corner of the seventh floor is full of reporters in jeans and button-down shirts, flats and cardigans, quiet with concentration. Katie Zuvich is one of them, tracking the dollars flooding our political system. She's hooked into a stream of information that gives her a bird's-eye view of the whole country.
My entire inbox is just like, ad alert, ad alert, ad alert.
They come from a special database telling her when there's a new political ad set to air somewhere in the U.S. She's seen hundreds since the primary season started. Back in January, when I first visited Katie, most of the ads were flowing into Iowa, and one caught her eye.
We are at war, not just abroad, but here at home. With the clear and present threat of radical Islamic terrorism on the march, we must...
This is an ad for Ted Cruz.
The one proven conservative for president. Stand for Truth, Inc. is responsible for the content of this advertising.
That last line,
Stand for Truth, Inc. is responsible for the content of this advertising.
That's the part Katie pays attention to. Stand for Truth, Inc. is a super PAC. The ad stood out to Katie because Stand for Truth is new. They just formed in November. And for a new group, they'd done something pretty big. They'd earmarked $4 million for 30-second TV ads like the one you just heard. So who gave that $4 million to Stand for Truth? To find out, Katie runs down a checklist of public documents. First on the list, super PACs have to register with the Federal Election Commission, or FEC. She checks their website.
Okay, we have two pieces of information. We have the address, and we also have the committee's email address.
Which belonged to a person, a guy in Kentucky named Eric Lichen, as it turns out. We found his phone number.
You've reached the desk of Eric Lichen at Des Moines Shoal. If this is an inquiry regarding a political committee...
Eric Lichen is the guy who files the paperwork for this super PAC. He's a lawyer who helps political campaigns and super PACs navigate the legal landscape. And he never responded to Katie's emails. So we sent a reporter to Lichen's law office in Lexington, Kentucky, to try to get an interview.
Good morning.
A secretary said Lichen wasn't in that day.
Would it be possible for me to speak to his assistant?
She is working on something right now.
Would it be possible for me to make an appointment?
You would have to call her.
And we never heard anything back from his office.
That's about all we know.
That was all we knew until about a month later, anyway. A slew of new FEC filings came out at the end of January, so I went back to D.C. to see what we could learn about who was giving money to Stand for Truth. There were just 29 donors.
So the top two contributions are each $500,000 by Adam and Tara Ross.
Together, they gave $1 million.
Who are they?
Let's find out. So Adam Ross, and he's Goldcrest Investments.
We found out that Adam and Tara Ross are a husband and wife team. He's an investment fund CEO in Dallas, and she's a lawyer who's written a few constitutional history books. We wanted to ask the Rosses why they'd chosen to drop $1 million to support Ted Cruz.
Goldcrest Capital.
Hi, this is Katie Zubich, a reporter at the Center for Public Integrity.
We left a message.
All right, thank you.
All right, thanks so much. That happens a lot.
So do you ever get a call back?
No. I never get a call back.
The Rosses never responded to our inquiries. But with a little digging, we found out more about them. Adam sits on the board of the Republican Jewish Coalition, along with some of the biggest Republican donor billionaires in the country. On Tara Ross's website, she says she's, quote, conservative, but with a definite libertarian streak, exclamation point. They've both been donating small amounts to Republican campaigns for years, but the $1 million donation to Cruz's super PAC dwarfed everything they've given before. How far did that $1 million go? Stand for Truth ran attack ads against Rubio and Trump in South Carolina that cost about $2 million total. So the Ross's donation would have paid for half of those ads. Now on to more shadowy territory. A group that's one of the big players this primary season is not a super PAC. And they've spent millions on ads like this.
What happens if we retreat? What happens is you'll leave a space. And that space will be filled by someone else. The only nations right now that can even
music bursting in the background, the glory of America, and you've got a very positive portrayal of Marco Rubio.
Michael Beckel is another political reporter at the Center for Public Integrity.
Learn more at conservativesolutionsproject.com.
It's a mystery where Conservative Solutions Project money is coming from, and it will remain a mystery for most, if not all, of the election season.
Conservative Solutions Project is another kind of outside group called a political nonprofit, a 501c4.
There's basically no paper trail. If it's an ad sponsored by a super PAC, you're going to be able to see who is behind it. You're going to see the names of the top donors. You're going to see who is really creating this and how much money is being spent on this. If it's an ad run by a nonprofit group, very limited information is publicly available.
That's why political nonprofits are often called dark money groups. They can raise unlimited amounts, and legally, they never have to disclose who is giving them money.
Do we have any idea how much money they have?
They put out a press release last year saying that they had raised about $16 million.
And they've spent at least $8.5 million on pro-Rubio ads so far.
Marco Rubio is in a very unique situation. Most candidates haven't seen a single candidate nonprofit group pop up.
This is the first presidential election where one dark money group is pushing one candidate so aggressively. That's an issue because the whole purpose of these 501c4 groups is that they're supposed to advocate for issues. They can't exist just to push one candidate. Some watchdog groups say Conservative Solutions Project has already crossed that line, but the group protects itself. Marco Rubio appears in their ads, but the ads never say the words, "Vote for Marco Rubio."
Those few words are very important. The few words that are missing allow lawyers to make a case to the IRS that this is part of their issue advocacy.
And they make that case so the groups can keep their tax-exempt status as nonprofits and spend as much money as they like. And even when there is a challenge, it takes years for the IRS to investigate. Conservative Solutions Project's ads for Marco Rubio have already run. They've already been seen by voters. They've already done their job.
So, Laura, here's what I'm wondering. Why should we, the people whose living rooms are being flooded with these political ads, care who pay for them? I mean, does that actually affect the way you think about a candidate or an ad if you know who's paying for it?
Al, if you want to answer that question, you have to think about that little disclaimer at the end of an ad.
Okay.
Paid for by Stand for Truth, Inc. or Priorities USA.
Mm-hmm.
That name of the outside group will be the only clue most people get about who's behind an ad. And if you start paying attention, you notice that all those names seem to have something in common.
And that is?
To find out, we have to play the Super PAC name game!
The Super PAC name game!
I'm going to name a Super PAC, and you try to guess its political leanings, liberal or conservative.
All right, let's do it. Let's do it. I'm ready.
Okay, our principles.
Liberal.
Wrong. Conservative. Keep the promise.
Definitely conservative.
Correct. Ding, ding, ding. Ted Cruz. Priorities USA.
Priorities USA. I'm going to give this to the right.
Nope. It's Hillary Clinton.
All right. Come on. Let's get my averages up. Let's go.
All right, let's mix it up here.
Bring it.
Right to rise.
Liberal.
Conservative. Jeb Bush.
Really? I thought that was a Bernie thing. Like, Bernie has the right to rise.
All right. Protect our future.
Liberal.
Totally fake.
Really? Laura.
Okay, well, you did pretty good, Al. You put in a good effort.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Al.
That was Reveal's Laura Starczewski, and she'll be joining us a little bit later in the show. So, clearly, it's hard to tell the political affiliation of these super PACs by their names alone. That's something political scientist Joanna Dunaway has been looking into.
They're sort of deliberately not upfront about who they are. They choose these friendly-sounding names so they can come in and just sound like, oh, well, our main purpose is really just to help society.
Would those friendly-sounding names actually sway voters? Do people even notice who pays for an ad? To find out, Dunaway created an experiment. She asked about 400 people to watch a political ad. What each person saw was the same at first.
It's happening right now in your neighborhood. A generation of young people is in danger.
The ad was fake. But Dunaway tried to make it as real as possible. It accused one candidate of being soft on crime and encouraged you to elect the other guy.
America deserves better. Vote Dave Reed for Congress.
And the only thing we changed was the small disclaimer at the end of the ad that said paid for by
the campaign to elect Dave Reed. Paid for by the National Rifle Association. Paid for by the Citizens for a Safer America.
That was the only difference, the disclaimer at the end. And here's what's amazing. The ad paid for by Citizens for a Safer America, the group with the super PAC-like name, was the one people found the most credible, with one exception. people who already liked the NRA trusted their ads the most. Everyone else trusted the vaguely named group. Dunaway calls this the persuasive power of ambiguity.
If you can't assign a motive, then I think people are going to at least treat your message or what you're trying to say as baseline credible.
People don't trust the ad paid for by a candidate because, in general, we think we know what politicians' motives are, and we don't trust them. We know that they put ads out designed to help them win, but that's not how we think of groups we've never heard of before.
That friendly-sounding anonymous name really does allow the message to seep in because people don't have a reason to instantly have their guard up. Because they don't know anything about you, and sure, your name sounds friendly.
Persuasion by absence of red flags.
Yeah, by absence of information. Or absence of reputation. Maybe that's the better way to put it.
That was Joanna Dunaway from Texas A&M University. With so many outside groups airing so many ads, over 100,000 of them so far, it's harder than ever for voters to cut through all the noise. When we come back, we'll keep following the money trail, taking a look at some of the biggest political donors, and what they're after might surprise you. This is Reveal from the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX.
Hi, it's Reveal's Laura Starcheski again. If you want to play the Super PAC name game yourself, you can. We created a quiz so you can test your election savvy. Just head to revealnews.org/superquiz and see if you can guess which super PACs are liberal and which are conservative. That's revealnews.org/superquiz. Have fun.
From the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX, this is Reveal. I'm Al Edson. We've told you that this is going to be the most expensive election in American history. But what we haven't said is there's a small group of very wealthy families behind much of that money. About half of the $400 million that flowed into this year's election early on came from just 158 families in the whole country. I'm here with John Dunbar from the Center for Public Integrity, who's joining us throughout the show. So, John, tell me a little bit about who these families are.
Well, they're rich. They're really rich. Like, billionaire rich. The really big money that's gone into the super PACs has come mostly from a bunch of older, conservative white guys.
So we're talking about old money here, right?
Not necessarily. A lot of these guys have actually built their fortunes themselves.
How they make their money?
We've seen a lot of hedge fund managers, an insurance executive. We've seen some oil and gas magnates. But also, we're seeing some new big donors that we hadn't seen in the last presidential election.
So who are these new big donors, and how much money are we talking here?
Well, the families who have given the largest donations are supporting Ted Cruz, the libertarian candidate from Texas. And the guys who stand out the most are brothers, Ferris and Dan Wilkes. These guys are billionaires. They made their money in the fracking business. They come from a little town in Texas called Cisco. And together, they gave $15 million to a super PAC that's backing Cruz.
$15 million? For one candidate?
Yeah, they're kind of a new breed. They're playing a big role in the split that we're seeing now in the GOP because they're supporting Cruz, who's kind of an outsider. He's not really part of the party establishment, and sort of in a way like Trump is outside the establishment.
All right, well, thanks, John. Let's dive into the Wilkes brothers. They are extremely media shy, so we sent Laura Starcheski to their hometown of Cisco to find out more about them, and not just their hometown, but straight to Ferris Wilkes Church.
About 10 miles outside of Cisco, the Assembly of Yahweh Seventh-day Church stands out in an empty landscape. The Wilkes family built this church, and Ferris, the older brother, is the pastor here. I was hoping to talk to his parishioners.
Excuse me, sir. Excuse me, ma'am. Ma'am?
I tried for a couple hours to flag down people coming in and out of church. I got a lot of friendly waves from behind rolled-up truck windows, but almost nobody stopped.
Hi. Any chance you'd be willing to talk a little bit about the church?
No, thank you.
Okay.
Have a good day, though.
Take care.
Eventually, Associate Pastor James King came out to the side of the road. I think he felt bad for me.
Do you need any water or tea? Or?
I'm okay for now.
Okay.
But as far as coming inside, that was not allowed.
We allow guests in all the time, but we have made the decision that no media are going to be allowed anymore. And I really hope you understand. I'm sorry about that.
And who made that decision?
That was Ferris and I.
Ferris Wilkes and James King made the decision because of an article a Daily Beast reporter wrote after attending a service. Her headline called the church anti-gay. But then some news aggregate reposted her story on Facebook and gave it a new headline, Gay-Hating Pastor, next to a photo of Ferris Wilkes.
It represented specifically our pastor as hateful. And a lot of the members took offense to that.
And now, James says, he and Ferris want the 200-some church members to focus on worshiping, with no microphones or cameras. He did fill me in on a few basics about the Assembly of Yahweh.
You know, most people hear the name of our church and think it's a little strange, but it goes back to that, wanting to get back to a pure religion.
And that search for a pure religion goes back to the Wilkes brothers' father, Voy Wilkes, who founded this church in the 1950s. Their beliefs come from a literal reading of the Bible, which leads to a blend of evangelical Christianity and Judaism. They celebrate the Jewish feasts and holidays like Passover, not traditional Christian ones. And they worship on Saturdays instead of Sundays.
Well, good afternoon.
I couldn't attend the service, but I found some recordings of Ferris Wilkes preaching from the pulpit.
Hope you all are having a wonderful day so far. I hope I don't do something to mess it up.
In between long sections on specific Bible verses, Ferris makes his views plain in a slow, low-key way.
One of the great sins of our nation is abortion. And marriage, being one man and one woman, that has to be part of what we stand for and what we believe.
To Ferris, the so-called gay agenda is part of an attack on Christianity and traditional family values.
Do understand that there is a war going on out there, and they're after the minds of your children and your grandchildren.
These aren't just views Ferris preaches to his congregation. They're causes he and his brother Dan have put big money behind. They've given millions to anti-abortion, anti-gay organizations like Focus on the Family. They've also shaped life here in Cisco. Pretty much everyone I talked to knew the Wilkes.
How's it going?
Hi there.
I met barber Matt Horner at his shop on the main drag, down the block from one of Cisco's two traffic lights.
You'll see this Chinese restaurant right here. You'll see a Ferrari or Lamborghini pull up, and they're eating in here, or they come in here for haircuts, or... My wife saw him at the Denny's the other night. Ferris and Joanne Wilkes at Denny's.
They're simple people with humble roots. That's what I kept hearing. Pam Craybill was playing canasta with some friends on a Friday night at the town's community center, which the Wilkes built. Pam said between that and the new baseball field, she didn't know where Cisco would be without them.
They've just done a lot. I think they're probably the reason that the town is starting to clean up a little bit. I just wish they'd do something about the streets. Yeah. We've got potholes that will sink, you know, eat a car alive.
The potholes, the boarded up buildings, it's clear Cisco is hurting. And this also has something to do with the Wilkes. The fracking company they founded, called Fractech, was originally based here in Cisco. The brothers sold their stakes in 2011 for over $3 billion. And the new owners closed the Cisco plant just this winter. I went out to the Fractech facility, where I ran into Deputy Sheriff Wendell Light. He moonlights working security for the Wilkes, circling the deserted plant in his pickup truck and Ray-Bans.
Everybody's just down and out. I mean, because they supplied lots of jobs and lots of income. If you have one income for one man that works here, he has family he feeds with that money, and so it affects lots of people.
When the plant closed, almost 100 jobs were lost. That's a big hit in a town of 3,900. The Wilkes seemed to be pretty much the only people in town who came out ahead after the fracking money dried up.
But they did good. They got into fracking business at the right time, got out of it at the right time, and they made a good home run out of this place. So.
And that home run was what launched the Wilkes' bold entrance into national politics as huge donors to Ted Cruz. They gave $15 million to a pro-Cruz super PAC. Ferris has also poured hundreds of thousands into Texas state races this year. Mark Jones at Rice University in Houston researches Texas politics.
The Wilkes brothers alone can
affect the balance of power in a way that no one on the establishment side is willing to do right now, or in some cases has the resources to do.
Jones says the Wilks are strengthening the split in the Republican Party between the establishment and newly powerful conservatives like Cruz. Plus, he says, the Wilks brothers have a different reason for giving than mainstream donors who are usually hoping for financial benefits like tax breaks.
Well, the Wilks brothers really are not donating to further their economic interests. Rather, they're giving money primarily to candidates that share their worldview or their political vision for the United States. In many ways, Ted Cruz is the perfect presidential candidate for them because he combines a strong support for liberty and limited government with also support for social conservative values.
Like fighting gay marriage and rolling back abortion rights. Ferris's Family Foundation has given millions to beef up a whole network of evangelical activist groups. It's given at least $1 million to Liberty Counsel, a Christian law firm. Founder Matt Staver says since the Wilks donation, he's become close with the family.
I wish America had more families like this that are concerned about the well-being of our country and are willing to share the resources that they have to help and benefit others in this country.
You might recognize Matt Staver's name. In 2015, he represented the Kentucky County Clerk who refused to issue same-sex marriage licenses. He's also defending the anti-abortion activists who made the stealth Planned Parenthood videos. The danger for America, Staver says, comes in not mixing faith and politics.
I mean, that's how the country began. It was faith and politics. I mean, George Washington said that the twin pillars of America were religion and morality, and we couldn't continue to survive if we labored to undermine those twin pillars.
Religion and morality are what drew the Wilks brothers to Ted Cruz. But if he turns out not to be electable, Staver says, they aren't afraid to change course.
It's kind of like looking at a pitcher in a baseball game. And if one pitcher is doing well, they're going to stand behind that pitcher. But if that pitcher is not doing so well and there's another one that needs to come in to win the World Series, they're going to stand behind that person too. And they're going to make the difficult decision.
The Wilks are committed to a cause, not a person.
That's Reveal's Laura Starczewski. As of this broadcast, Ted Cruz is catching up to Republican frontrunner Donald Trump. His super PACs still have about $25 million left in the bank to keep him in the race. So what about Democratic kingmakers? Everybody's heard of George Soros, but there's this other guy, Tom Steyer, doing something a little different. He was a billionaire hedge fund manager, the head of a global investment firm. But in 2012, he stepped down to become a full-time environmental activist. He's the founder of Next Generation Climate, which combines grassroots organizing with big money contributions to campaigns. We turned to Wilson Sayer, a political reporter in Miami with WLRN, and asked her to take us through the intricate dance between cash, candidates, and environmentalists taking place in Florida right now.
About 20 minutes south of downtown Miami, Black Point Marina juts out into Biscayne Bay. A path takes you onto the skinny little jetty surrounded by water.
That was like 2 weeks ago. There's a hidden trail back here that I take with my friends and my dog and everything, and which leads to Biscayne Bay. And I'm the only one like out there for like 2 miles.
Esteban Castro is a student at Florida International University. He's showing me one of his favorite spots.
You know, it's a beautiful little secluded location. And I was like, wow, I've taken family members, taken friends, and I would like to take my future children there. But honestly, like it hit home when I realized that 15, 20 years from now, even then, I wouldn't be able to, like, show them.
That's because rising sea levels are threatening low-lying areas in South Florida. It gets a lot of media attention down here.
Fish taking to the streets in one South Florida neighborhood.
Indian Creek Drive out here filling up with water.
Another night of tidal flooding on Miami Beach, but not as bad.
All of this has led some people, like Esteban, to sign on as volunteers with a group called Next Gen Climate. Here's one of their ads.
America's never been a country of quitters. It's not who we are. We don't ignore threats like climate change. We face our problems head on. With
American NextGen is trying to make climate change a bigger part of our national conversation.
Hey, you have a moment for clean energy?
As a volunteer, Esteban goes out on campus and catches students on their way to class. He tries to get them signed up to support NextGen's 50 by 30 initiative.
With NextGen, we have a specific plan to switch the United States to 50% clean energy by the year 2030. You know, trying to push our politicians to make the changes that we need to happen to, like, save the earth. Because honestly, it's going bad, especially Miami, dude.
Today, Esteban's talking to a student named Derek Colas.
We're on the biggest threat to be, like, underwater, honestly. No.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, we're already under sea level. So.
Derek fills in his name on a roster, then he ticks a box that says he'll vote in elections. This is an important part of NextGen's strategy.
So by having them sign up and putting information down, that's kind of the first step in getting their personal momentum going.
The next step is having people support candidates who advocate climate solutions, especially NextGen's. And for the most part, this means Democratic candidates.
Climate change is real, and we have a moral responsibility to transform our energy system.
The United States will then lead in dealing with the very real problems of climate change.
Both Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton have said something needs to be done about climate change. But only Clinton has signed on with NextGen's pledge of powering America with 50% clean energy by 2030. NextGen hasn't endorsed her yet. Last year, Tom Steyer and his wife hosted a fundraiser for her in their house in San Francisco, $2,700 per person. But for the most part, instead of directly contributing to campaigns, Steyer uses his organization to sway elections. In 2015, Steyer put at least $13 million into his super PAC, NextGen Climate Action Committee. And there's also NextGen Climate Action, a 501c4 nonprofit. It doesn't have to disclose its donors or specifically how it spends its money. It's one of those dark money organizations. Now, these groups have separate finances, but clearly there's some cross-pollination. Take a listen, for example, to this ad paid for by NextGen Climate Action, the nonprofit.
The pollutants that cause climate change also pose great risk to our health. We must use science to inform our policy decisions. It's the responsibility of all of us and our government to protect our collective health.
And now this ad, paid for by NextGen Climate Action Committee, the Super PAC.
Climate change puts men and women in uniform at risk in ways we've never had to consider before. So the Department of Defense has classified climate change as a threat multiplier that destabilizes already unstable parts of the globe.
Yeah, they sound and look and feel almost identical. Same music, same tone. Online, they use the same graphics, and the two groups share a website. There aren't any rules saying they're not supposed to do this. But remember, C4s don't have to disclose their donors like super PACs do. So I sent an email to a spokesperson with NextGen's national operations with some questions about how they maintain transparency with the nonprofit. NextGen spokesperson Suzanne Henkels didn't answer that question. She just said that the setup allows the organization to be more effective. So how is NextGen effective? Campaigns and outside organizations like NextGen's aren't supposed to coordinate with each other directly. But there are some ways they do help each other out, and it's a silent tango.
The general courting that goes on between candidates and organizations.
Suzanne Robbins teaches political science at the University of Florida and specializes in campaign finance. She says in some ways, NextGen isn't all that unique.
Groups are getting more and more active in this type of activity.
Here's what she says is new. Some issue-based groups, like NextGen, have changed tactics. Instead of just trying to be heard and influence the debate, they're getting directly involved in election activity. Here's how it works for NextGen. For this election cycle, the group started up its Florida operations in April of 2015. It's built up a pretty robust network of people across the state who are talking a lot about the election and the environment. But for now, it doesn't bring up specific candidates.
We're not here to say who you should vote for.
Jackie Lee is director of NextGen Climate in Florida.
It's a matter of bringing the issue up and making sure candidates understand that they have to address it and now come out with clear plans and that voters demand clear plans for 50 by 30.
But if NextGen does endorse Hillary Clinton, she stands to benefit from the power of NextGen and their campaign, along with the network it's set up over the past several months. And since Clinton campaign staffers only showed up in force in mid-February, it's safe to assume she could really use this extended network.
What she gets is sort of an endorsement that says, I'm the environmental candidate. So for people where climate change, rising sea level issues, in the environment more generally, it signals that this is a candidate that other groups find acceptable and, in fact, desirable. So it acts as somewhat of an endorsement of her candidacy.
Even if they're not running ads directly in support of her. It's not a quid pro quo, but it's the same type of winking and helping without touching that these sort of outside organizations do with growing frequency. And more groups set up just like NextGen, with the nonprofit and the super PAC, are doing this. It's about using every tool in the toolbox. And for NextGen, this 50 by 30 initiative is the litmus test for the candidates to figure out where to employ these tools. Those who pass don't necessarily get direct payment, but NextGen might help a candidate get votes. And in the end, isn't that what races are all about?
That's Wilson Sayer of WLRN in Miami. In the interest of full disclosure, we should mention that we've received funding from the Tomcat Charitable Trust, which was established by Tom Steyer and his wife, Kat Taylor. If you think super PACs are just for big nationwide elections, think again. It turns out they're also getting involved in local races and bringing plenty of cash to the game. We'll be back in a minute for that part of the story on Reveal from the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX.
Hey folks, it's Megan Farnsworth from Reveal. We strive to bring you the best possible hour of investigative reporting every week. But what do you think about the show? How are we doing? We want to know. So do us a quick favor, visit surveynerds.com/reveal and tell us more about yourself. It will take less than 2 minutes, I promise, and your feedback will go a long way. That link again, surveynerds.com/reveal.
I'm Al Ledson, and this is Reveal. Today, we're talking about money in politics, the incredible amounts flowing this year, and what that money pays for. So far, we've been focusing mostly on the presidential race, but there's a lot of money pouring into local races, mayoral contests, school board races, even council primaries. In these small races, a little bit of money goes a long way. Patrick Madden's an investigative reporter at WAMU in Washington, D.C. He's looked into a couple city elections where there was an influx of mysterious money.
Thank you, Mr. Lake.
Thank you very much.
The scene, a run-of-the-mill legislative hearing, a wooden dais, bad lighting, a handful of lawmakers, lobbyists, and staff milling around.
Thank you, Councilmember Nadeau.
We're in Washington, D.C., not the U.S. Capitol, but about a mile down Pennsylvania Avenue. It's here, at the D.C. Council Chambers, where lawmakers tackle life's more nitty-gritty details. Garbage pickups, parking meter rates, potholes.
The project in question is public land.
This hearing is over a parking lot that's being sold off to private developers at a discount. It's pretty normal stuff, except it doesn't go according to script.
Public records show that you donated $10,000 to the mayor's quote-unquote fresh pack, which is the...
Councilmember Mary Che starts questioning one of the developers.
Is that correct? You gave $10,000?
That is correct.
Yes. And you are doing business with the city at the same time, right?
Yes.
Yes, okay.
And then the fresh pack scandal erupted last fall in D.C. I'd gotten a tip about the group's existence and looked through campaign finance filings for the city. There they were. It turns out some close associates of Mayor Muriel Bowser had found a loophole. Normally, there are limits on how much you can give to a political action committee or a PAC, but a small change in city law allowed PACs to raise unlimited donations during non-election years. It essentially turned them into super PACs, which have no limits on contributions. So the mayor's friends put together Fresh PAC and started collecting money from people, like this developer.
Who asked you to give $10,000, which is five times the amount in an ordinary election year you could give to a mayoral candidate, and far more than the, way more than the $500 you could give to a ward council member? Who asked you to give that money?
I don't recall.
The developer, Bua Benitier, admitted giving the money, but wouldn't name names. I started looking at everyone connected to the group. Fresh PAC's treasurer also served as the mayor's campaign treasurer. And going through contracting records and campaign finance reports, I found that a number of the group's donors had received millions of dollars in city contracts. Others had been appointed by the mayor to sit on powerful boards and commissions. Councilmember Mary Che was livid.
The money was being sought from people who were then doing business with our government. I was stunned by the audacity of it. I think it put, you know, right there in front of the public what I would have considered sleaze.
And not only that, as a critic of the mayor, the councilwoman was a potential target of Fresh Pack. The group had raised several hundred thousand dollars and hoped to raise more, up to $1 million. But public outcry over Fresh Pack was growing. And late one night, as Mayor Bowser was traveling overseas, organizers announced the group was shutting down. The money was returned to donors. Even its name was an embarrassment. The mayor had run for office promising a fresh start to scandal-plagued D.C. During a talk show interview, she told listeners she didn't do anything wrong or out of the ordinary.
I don't think I look like a hypocrite at all. Having a PAC, we know if you look at any state across the nation and you look at congressional seats that political leaders have PACs.
She's right, but Fresh Pack was raising lots more than a mere PAC could. And this flood of big money political contributions is changing local politics around the country. Campaign finance experts say it was just a matter of time.
Because local level races are generally very inexpensive.
Edwin Bender heads the National Institute for Money in State Politics. Ever since the Supreme Court's Citizens United decision, there are no limits on how much money people can give to super PACs.
A super PAC can come in and dump $1 million and have an outsized impact on a local race.
That investment can pay off. Local lawmakers are often in charge of millions of dollars in city contracts and real estate deals.
The economic incentive for builders, contractors at the local level to form a super PAC, to get their friends elected, and to also then have a friendly ear when it comes time to contract, is absolutely an incentive to form a super PAC, and one of the reasons why there probably will be a great proliferation of them.
From a big city mayoral contest in Philadelphia to council elections in Dallas, super PACs are already starting to influence local races around the country. And when they do show up in local races, voters are often left searching for answers. I make the drive up I-95 and then the New Jersey Turnpike to the town of Parsippany. It's a small bedroom community, less than an hour's drive from Manhattan. I meet Roy Messmer, a local activist, in a parking lot next to Town Hall.
Hey, Roy, how are you?
Last spring, a mysterious super PAC got involved in the local council primary. Messmer pulls out a campaign flyer, one of several that were dropped off at the homes of Republican voters.
This is an attack ad.
Yes, that's an attack ad, sir.
This lists sort of these accusations here, abuse of power, stolen records.
Right.
The nasty flyer targeted one of the council members up for re-election. The flyers looked pricey and professional, but on another one, there was a small mistake.
This is a sitting councilman for over 20 years. I think 27 to be exact.
They misspelled his name.
Boom. Boom. And on the back. I caught this immediately.
The man's name was misspelled. The name of the group was at the bottom.
New Jersey Future First.
So,
at first, people were stumped. New Jersey's Future First wasn't on file with the state or federal election commissions, and the flyers listed a Washington, D.C. address.
Why is somebody coming into Parsippany spending this kind of money? You're talking about a town of a population of about 55,000. You just say to yourself, what's going on?
Back to D.C. to find out.
You couldn't be closer to Congress than where we are right now, just about 100 feet from where the U.S. Capitol starts. And here it is.
Jennifer May was listed as New Jersey's Future First treasurer. I had tried calling and emailing her and got no answer, so I showed up in person.
Hello?
Oh, hi, I'm trying to reach Jennifer May.
You can come on up, third floor.
Thank you.
When I got to Jennifer's office on the third floor, the sign on the door read Next Level Partners, which turned out to be what's called a compliance firm. They do the paperwork for federal super PACs and other campaigns. There are dozens of companies like this on Capitol Hill. Super PACs are an industry in D.C. When I walked in, Jennifer said she didn't want to talk about the super PAC in Parsippany.
You know, you helped, I guess, set that up or at least handle the compliance for that.
I mean, it's kind of like, would you talk to your accountant? Like, would someone call your accountant about, like, your personal tax return? Like, no. So I just don't feel comfortable talking about this stuff because, like, you would need to call the entity where I'm, like, the accountant.
All right, so she didn't want to talk. As she put it, she's there just to make sure everything is in working order. She's not really in charge of the pack. So the trail, I guess, goes back to New Jersey now.
First stop, Trenton, the state capital, where Jeff Brindle leads New Jersey's Election Law Enforcement Commission.
We don't have a law which requires groups that are simply spending independently to register or to disclose their activities with us.
So let me get this straight. This super PAC that came in into this local, you know, council race in a township of New Jersey, they didn't have to disclose who their donors were?
No, under the law, they were not required.
Most cities and states have strict campaign finance limits. Some even go a step further with so-called pay-to-play laws. New Jersey says government contractors can't donate more than $300, but these restrictions don't apply to super PACs.
I don't think there's any question about it. We're seeing more and more contractor money going to independent groups and PACs because they're not included under the pay-to-play law.
A few days before the primary in Parsippany, the donors behind New Jersey's Future First were finally unmasked. IRS filings show it was mostly funded by two New Jersey companies with large contracts with the town. One was an insurance company, the other an engineering firm. The Super PAC sent me a statement. They wouldn't comment on the Parsippany race, but said they were founded by New Jersey business people who were concerned about partisan gridlock and wanted their voices heard. Paul Cariffi Jr. was the council member targeted by the Super PAC's negative flyers.
There were a lot of lies in these mailers, and they were just pumping these things out every couple days.
He'd been critical of the town's contract with the insurance company.
You know, for these people to donate, you know, the amount of money that they were, $40,000, $50,000, $60,000, is nothing to them with the amount of money that they're making from our town.
He won the primary, though it was close, 14 votes. After the election, he had a message for the contractors who funded the group.
I wish these people that donated to this PAC would have spent their money more wisely, maybe on cancer research, because they wasted almost $200,000 trying to get rid of me, and it didn't work.
Not every investment pans out. Super PACs don't always decide the winner. But for companies and contractors, it's a risk many are willing to take.
Patrick Madden is an investigative reporter at WAMU in Washington, D.C. I'm going to bring back John Dunbar from the Center for Public Integrity. And John, this whole hour, I've been wondering just this one thing, and that is, what difference does it make? I mean, you look at Jeb Bush, whose super PAC raised an ungodly amount of money.
Yeah, way more than $100 million.
And even that did not get him the nomination.
A lot of it, I think, has to do with the candidate, at least in this case. Jeb just happened to walk into an election as an establishment choice in an anti-establishment environment. And he had a slow start, and he really didn't hit his stride until it was too late. I also think it's worth remembering that it's awful early yet, and we're talking about hundreds of millions of dollars, and the amounts are only increasing. Somebody thinks they're getting something for their money, that's for sure. Otherwise, they wouldn't keep dumping it into these races.
Mm-hmm.
I think when a big donor doesn't get what they want, it's more an exception to the rule, and I think they're still figuring out the best way to spend their money.
So Citizens United has been made into the big boogeyman in all this. Do you see it like that, or is it more nuanced?
Well, the Supreme Court is basically saying that money is speech, and if if I've got more money than you, well, I got more speech, or at least I got a bigger bullhorn. A lot of people find that troublesome.
So I guess the question I have is, if you disagree with Citizens United, then what can be done? Like, how is this ever going to change?
Well, the first and most obvious route would be to pass an amendment to the Constitution, but that's really, really hard to do. I mean, you remember the Equal Rights Amendment? We still haven't passed that. The other route is to get the Supreme Court to reverse itself, and that doesn't happen very often either. However, with the passing of Justice Scalia, the possibility of a reversal is a little bit greater. But right now, there are no cases in the pipeline.
John, that just sounds so, I don't know, rare and limited. Is there any other way this could happen?
Yeah, what we need is a scandal, a big one. And I'm actually serious about that. That's what happened in Watergate, and that's what happened in the soft money scandals in the late 90s and the early 2000s that resulted in the McCain-Feingold legislation. But, you know, unfortunately, it's a heck of a thing, but we don't see major change in this country until we see major crisis.
All right, John. Well, I guess we'll just have to wait for the next scandal. That's John Dunbar from the Center for Public Integrity. Laura Starchesky was our lead producer on today's show. Deb George was the senior editor. We had a lot of help from WAMU and WLRN and the political reporting team at the Center for Public Integrity. Special thanks to Peter Montgomery at People for the American Way, who helped us get a hold of the recording of Ferris Wilkes' sermons. Our theme music is by Camarado, Lightning. Support for Reveal is provided by the Reva and David Logan Foundation, the Ford Foundation, the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, and the Ethics and Excellence in Journalism Foundation. Reveal is a co-production of the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX. I'm Al Edson, and remember, there is always more to the story.